Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Thursday, November 3rd. Today, we're talking to Colorado Sun political reporter Jesse Paul. We'll cover the recent sudden death of the Colorado House Minority Leader, what's going on with early ballot returns, and a post-election event that Jesse will moderate. Before we continue, a message from our sponsors at Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy can help you find ways to keep your home or business running smoothly while reducing energy use and saving you money. Find everyday tips for using less energy and simple ways to manage your energy budget at xcelenergy.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. A team of federal surveyors scoured the sage-covered hills of northwestern Colorado Territory on this date in 1872, investigating rumors of a rich source of precious gems. As they dug through anthills and studied the specimens of diamonds and rubies spread across the landscape, the team declared the site an elaborate hoax. The federal government authorized several studies of western resources after the Civil War. Geologist Clarence King secured appointment to lead a survey of the region in 1867, a task that occupied him and a small team for the next 5 years. As their work concluded, chatter about profitable diamond strikes percolated in the West. In October, several prospectors announced that they had found nearly 300 diamonds and other gems in northwestern Colorado. This worried King, whose teams had found no geological evidence to support the claim. If it was true, King's work could be repudiated. As a late addition to their schedule, King and his team returned to present-day Moffat County and found the obviously salted claim, with cheap gems strewn about in an unnatural fashion. King managed to warn investors in San Francisco before they paid exorbitant fees to nefarious people for a worthless plot of land. King's exposure of the hoax earned him wide praise. One San Francisco press stated, quote, "We have escaped, thanks to God and Clarence King, a great financial calamity." Before we continue, the Colorado Sun invites you to attend Health Insurance Headaches, virtually on November 16th from 6 to 7 p.m. Health reporter John Ingold will talk with experts about different Colorado health insurance options, shopping tips, and more. Registration is free and available at coloradosun.com/events. Next, our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you today. And today we are talking to the Colorado Sun's political reporter, Jesse Paul. Hey, Jesse.
Hey.
I understand how incredibly busy you are, because from the airing of our conversation here, we are 5 days away from Election Day. So I know a lot of people are getting their ballots in, and I want to talk about that. But first, there was a tragic event that was related to the State House this past week. Do you want to give a mention to the legislator that we lost?
Yeah. So on Sunday morning, I started to hear some rumors that House Minority Leader Hugh McKean had passed away, the top Republican in the chamber. And about 15 or 20 minutes later, we were able to confirm that that was actually true. And just a really devastating thing for a lot of people in the Colorado political community, including reporters. We all really liked Hugh, was a super nice and kind guy. He was only 55 years old and just turned 55 a few days before his death and died of a sudden heart attack. And just a really sad situation. He's a father of two kids, has a longtime girlfriend, really well liked in the Capitol among Republicans and Democrats and nonpartisan staff. And, it's just kind of sent everybody reeling, really upsetting thing to happen during an already very stressful time.
Right. And he was extremely active in helping some of his fellow colleagues during this campaign season. And he was from Loveland, I believe. And I'm sure that the Loveland community is mourning his loss as well.
Yeah, he was a Loveland City Councilman before he entered the legislature. And we just found out today that they're going to actually have Hugh lie in state in the Capitol on Thursday with some military and first responder recognition. So people can pay their respects at the Capitol if they'd like. And certainly this is a big interruption for House Republicans who are hoping to win a bunch of seats this November and maybe not take a majority back in the chamber, but certainly make it more difficult for Democrats to pass legislation. So, Hugh was working really hard at that at the time of his death. And certainly the guy was under a lot of pressure and stress. And we've just been thinking about his friends and colleagues and family.
Well, thank you for that. And let's move in from somebody who really gave their all to the Colorado legislature and to politics in general in Colorado. Let's segue to turnout numbers for elections. What are you and the politics team seeing?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to look at the turnout numbers right now, because in previous midterm elections, you know, you've seen higher Republican turnout at first, and then things kind of even out. But this year, we're seeing a flip. So more Democrats have turned in ballots than Republicans so far. And then, you know, the highest group of turnout, I believe, was still unaffiliated voters, which is also a little surprising. But what's interesting is that turnout is down from 2018 overall turnout. And so I just wonder if there's not quite as much excitement about this election as there was in previous ones. Obviously, in the past, it was the first term of Donald Trump's first term. And so, you know, there was a lot of enthusiasm among Democrats to get out and kind of push back against that. And then 2020 was obviously a presidential year. So it's not unusual to see lower turnout in a midterm election, but there's a lot at stake this year, a lot of big races. So it's interesting to see the turnout be kind of flat. It could be reflective, though, of people just trying to make up their minds at the last minute. And, you know, I've talked to some Republican operatives and experts who say basically they think that their party's voters are holding on to their ballots until the last minute, kind of a vestige of the conspiracies about the 2020 presidential election. So I would expect to see kind of a surge in Republican ballots in the final couple of days or final day. And that could really make things look a lot different as results come in on election night.
Right. And, you know, also when those ballots drop in the mail, they have a lot of plop factor this year. They are beefy ballots. And, you know, I know in my case, it took me a lot longer to go through and study everything. And I can tell you that I 100% relied on the Colorado Sun's voter guide. And our listeners can go to coloradosun.com, and right in the middle of our homepage is Colorado Voter Guide 2022 election. And I found all of the breakdown and the analysis that I needed there for this very beefy ballot. So thank you. I know you kind of shepherded that whole project with our reporting team, and know that at least I found it extremely useful.
Well, thank you. I kind of cheated because I get to read all of them. So I was able to have all that stuff in the back of my mind. One more plug for the ballot guide. You know, one of the things that we did this year that I think is really important that some other news outlets didn't was go way beyond what you can find in the Blue Book, which is the state issue ballot guide, which most people probably don't know does have, you know, lawmaker input. So there are changes made to the language in there by lawmakers who may support or not support the different ballot measures. But we also looked really closely at the spending here at the Colorado Sun, just because that can give you a big idea about what political candidates are being influenced by and who's behind these ballot measures. So I'm a little biased, but I think we have an excellent ballot guide this year.
Jesse, tell us a little bit about, once we do get to next Tuesday, to November 8th, what is our election plan? What are you and Sandra Fish, Elliot Winsler, and the whole reporting team at the Sun, what's your plan?
Yeah, so, you know, our reporters and photographers are going to fan out across the state to different polling places and watch parties, talking to voters, casting their ballots at the last minute, and then obviously going to watch, you know, acceptance speeches and concession speeches. And, you know, our policy at the Sun is to wait to publish stories until we've got a clear idea if a race is going one way or another, or if we are not going to know on election night itself. So we won't publish a story with early returns because they are just that, and they can be highly misleading. And so instead of making you come back 40 times, we're just going to make sure, give you the article, the information that you need when it comes out. But we will have results updating on our website, so you can check those out before we actually write the stories, whether or not a race is called. But on our homepage, you know, we'll have the rolling results as they come in minute by minute for Senate and governor and attorney general, CD8, all the big races. And, you know, we're already kind of looking post-election day to think about the stories that we need to write about the themes that are coming out from this election. We got a pretty good idea about how some of these races are going to shape out just based on polling averages. You know, I'll mention that, you know, Republicans, if the polling numbers hold, are heading toward a pretty disappointing election night. The only Republican I've seen in a major race who's been leading a Democratic candidate in any poll is Barbara Kirkmeyer, state senator in the 8th Congressional District, who's running against State Representative Yadira Caraveo, who's a Democrat. And this is Colorado's new congressional district that stretches from like the northern Denver suburbs up to Greeley. It's always been a toss-up district, but maybe leaning a little bit toward Republicans. So I'd say that's the one that we're going to probably be watching most closely on election night. But based on the polling that we've seen, it seems like Democrats are headed toward a pretty good evening. Obviously, things can change. We've got a week left, but that's at least what the polling indicates.
Very interesting. And I also imagine there might be a few items that we really don't know about until a day or two after, right?
Yeah, and I think it's important for people to just remain patient. You know, obviously counting ballots takes a long time. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, that we're expecting a big influx at the end, maybe a little bit larger than we've seen in previous years. And so the more ballots that get turned in election day, the slower the counting process goes. And so the first batch of numbers that we get at 7 p.m. or 7:30 p.m. on election night really shouldn't be read with Talmudic in intent. Just people should be patient. You gotta wait till you see all kinds of results. I've definitely seen all different kinds of ballot measures and races start one way and then end another one. So, you know, we'll be watching closely and waiting for the Associated Press, our partners, you know, who've got a long history of this. They pretty much never get it wrong on race calls. And again, you know, race calls are just race calls. The final results, those are the ones that really matter. So we're watching closely. We want to make sure we keep people informed, but not thinking that something's going to turn out a way that ultimately will not.
Yeah, well, thank you for your thoroughness and everybody on your team, too. The other thing that I'm looking forward to is you are going to host a post-election conversation on Thursday, November 17th. And that will be a virtual event from 6 to 7 p.m., talking to other reporters, journalists, policy wonks who love to nerd out on post-election breakdowns. And so I'd encourage any of our listeners to go over to coloradosun.com/events, and you can sign up for this free virtual event. And again, Jesse, you'll be just, you know who you're going to be talking to yet?
Yeah, we're still finalizing the lineup, but it's going to be a lot of the political reporters who listen to this podcast will know well. So I'll be on there with Sandra Fish. And then right now we've got Caitlin Kim from Colorado Public Radio, who's agreed to be on, working on getting Marshall Zellinger over from Nine News, and then maybe one or two other folks, just people who've been watching this election as closely as we have, who've got a lot of experience in Colorado politics. And, you know, it'll be fun to kind of take some reader questions and kind of unpack everything. Once the dust settles, I know I'm personally pretty excited to get some sleep in December. So November 9th will be a nice day for me.
Indeed. And then we'll catch you virtually on the 17th for the post-election conversation. And again, listeners, just head over to coloradosun.com/events. If you sign up for it and can't even, you know, make it that night, you can catch it later on our YouTube channel. So Jesse, thanks for swinging by on what I know is a busy day for you. If anybody out there has questions or comments about the Daily Sun Up podcast, drop us an email at podcast@coloradosun.com. And thanks to everybody else who helped produce today's podcast, including our production partners, Pirate Audio. Have a wonderful day out there. I sincerely hope you can join us for the next episode of the Daily Sun Up.
Read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. The embattled director of Colorado Parks and Wildlife has stepped down 6 months after he was suspended for making an offensive remark about a black coworker. Dan Prenslow used the phrase "back of the bus" when referring to Elise Allo Lee, a CPW contract worker, during an award ceremony after an agency conference that focused on diversity and inclusion. She filed a complaint with CPW calling it a racist reference to segregation-era rules that governed blacks. Prenslow, who apologized and said he had no ill intent, was suspended in April. He told friends Tuesday in private text messages he was retiring. The city of Idaho Springs will pay $7 million to settle a lawsuit filed by a 75-year-old man who was left disabled after a police officer hit him with a taser. Michael Clark's attorney says it's the largest settlement in state history for a civil rights case not involving a death. Clark was severely injured when police came to his door, and he answered it holding a sword. Clark put down the weapon, but an officer shocked him anyway. Clark was knocked to the ground and suffered permanent brain injuries, and he now uses a wheelchair. The officer who used the taser, Nicholas Hanning, was fired. He later pleaded guilty to misdemeanor assault. Xcel Energy has killed its plan to build a hydropower project in Uinoweap Canyon outside Grand Junction. Colorado's largest electric company made the announcement Wednesday, one day after receiving federal permissions to study the $1.6 billion project. The Uinoweap plan, unveiled last year, sparked controversy because it would have flooded the remote canyon and forced 14 homeowners out of their houses. The utility declined to comment on why it has dropped the plan. Xcel said earlier this year that Uinoweap Canyon was the only place in Colorado where the project would work. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And The Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.